Passionate, driven, enthusiastic, euphoric. This is who we are as entrepreneurs. But how we leverage these incredible attributes to dream and build businesses that scale and grow is what this podcast is all about. Hello, I'm attorneypreneur Josh Brown, and welcome to Franchise Euphoria. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Franchise Euphoria. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Andy Medley. Andy has spent his career leading fast growth companies through implementing open book management and his business as a game philosophy. Andy's companies have been named one of Inc.'s 500 fastest growing companies in America on three separate occasions and one of Indiana's 10 fastest growing companies by the Indianapolis Business Journal on four separate occasions. Today, Andy acts as co-founder and president of PERQ, that's P-E-R-Q. PERQ is a web engagement company whose technology, FatWin, increases website conversion by creating and delivering interactive experiences to the right consumers at the right time. Hello, Andy, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you've had a lot of experiences. I've known you a long time. You and I are friends, and you're a client, and I've had an opportunity to watch you over probably, what, the last 15 or 16 years go from starting several companies and really building a couple of them up to a pretty substantial size. And so I'd love for you to take a minute and tell the folks who are tuning in a little bit more about that and about your experience.
Yeah, so I would say that our path to where we are today is one of learning, education, and then of both fast growth and then dealing with that little thing that happened in 2009 called the recession. You know, our original structure was a holding company structure where we had different businesses branded basically by what market they were going after. And, you know, this is a truly an entrepreneurial story because it's one where we started when we were 23, maybe just turned 24, and not a lot of education. So a lot of decisions we made back then, we didn't necessarily understand the impact. That's full candor. So for example, what's better than one company, two companies, right? That's at least what the way a 24-year-old thinks. And the reality is that's wrong. So we took a long time from some decisions that we didn't put a lot of thought into and to unwinding them to get ourselves to the point where we basically divested the brands, did rebranding and wrapped them all together because ultimately they were performing the same functions, just branded separately. So, you know, over those 15 years, a lot of decisions, a lot of experience inside of it, but it ultimately all transitioned into today what is known as PERQ.
Yeah. And when you say we, for those who don't know, Andy is partners with Scott Hill, who I had the pleasure of interviewing some time back. And that was a fantastic episode as well. But the two of them started PERQ, in 2001?
Yeah, we were founded in 2001. Yep.
Yeah. And you guys at one point within those first few years, you were one of the fastest growing companies in America, right?
Yeah, it's funny, you don't know what you don't know, but our first experience was really catching lightning in a bottle. And you know, our first year, we went from, you know, zero revenue and two guys working out of a family room to, I think 3 years later, we did $11 million. And that grew all the way to 2008. We got up to $39 million in revenue, and it was a rocket ship of a ride and incredibly fun. And then our true education of the business really kind of started right around there when we realized that we weren't necessarily in control of this rocket ship.
Well, of course, with that fast growth, right, you had to hire a number of people. So I imagine you went from, you know, you and Scott sitting on your couch to having a number of new hires, contractors, employees. Talk a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, that was, you know, I probably beat ourselves up a little bit too much, but that was one of the things that we did really well. You know, one of the first questions we asked ourselves when it came time to start to bring on people, you know, it was the simple question, if we weren't in our shoes where we were hiring or we weren't looking for jobs, what kind of company would we look for? What would we want that to be? So one of the things that we did really well early on was really think about the cultural piece and really try and put ourselves ourselves in a position where we understood the impact of a decision that somebody's making to choose to come and work at a place where ultimately they're going to spend more time in that company than they are with their family. That's just a reality. And so how can we make that as beneficial to them as possible? And beneficial to us means that we're challenging them as much as we possibly can. We're making them the best and getting the most out of them, maybe the more than what they thought was possible, because we're surrounding them with other smart people and we're trying to provide a crystal clear mission or vision about what it is that we're trying to accomplish. And so for us, that was one of the key things when we started to bring on people, was really focusing on the scale piece of culture, and how do you actually make sure that when you're bringing on the number of people that you're bringing on, as fast as you're bringing them on, what is the thing that needs to hold true so that you don't forget who you are, or you don't lose control of actually the core values of the organization?
Well, it's got to be hard though too. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of folks listening are either, you know, they may have just purchased a franchise, or maybe they're turning their business into a franchise and they're growing through they're going through a process of growth, right? They're hiring more people, they're looking to grow and scale. And I think at a real basic level, one of the hardest things to do is to let go of that control when you're sort of used to doing it yourself, filling a number of roles. Did you and Scott ever have that issue in terms of as you were growing? Was it difficult to let go of some things? And what was that like? Or perhaps maybe you let go of too much and that caused some issues as well.
I think, you know both of us pretty well, and passing on responsibility isn't necessarily something either one of us struggle with. But so that, you know, and that's something that we didn't necessarily need to be taught. And to your point, I think there were times we did it really well, and there were times we might have not necessarily put the right metrics in place before that person started. And so that's one of the things that I've really taken to heart over the last few years. It is challenging when you are so intimately involved into a particular process or to a particular customer or whatever, and it's time that you have to get out. Otherwise, you are slowing your organization down and you are getting in your own way, right? And that finding the balance that makes you feel comfortable to step out of it, but while at the same time making sure that you're putting that person who you've hired to do that specific task and giving them the runway to do that, but at the same time I'm communicating what is expected of them in a way that they can actually go out and execute. Yeah, that's the balance, right? And so for us, I don't know if you ever get that perfect, right? You know, we just brought on an executive and I'm constantly tweaking what is the best way for me to step out of a role and give autonomy, but make sure that they are understanding and learning and able to absorb from me all the stuff that got us to the point where we could hire them in the first place, right? So I think the fact is that if you can truly sit down before you bring somebody on board and say to yourself, what does perfection look like, right? What does perfection look like in this role for this person? And 6 months from there, you back it up and say, all right, what am I doing over the next 6 months to get myself and that person in that role? And the first thing starts with aligning on what the expectations are. And then from there, you have to at some point in time understand that mistakes are going to be made, that they are going to do some things differently than you would have done them. But these are all kind of inset into the bigger picture of things, which is can do the job better than you in that role to be able to execute.
Now, one of the things that, you know, you guys have done really, really well, I think, over the last 16 years is like you alluded to, you've built a good culture. You've really ingrained this whole open book management style where you really make everybody that's on your team feel a part of the team, which is so important when you're growing a business. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys decided that you were going to do open book management? Because you decided a long time ago. I know now it's sort of the common thing to do, but as I recall, you guys started doing that before really I knew anybody who was doing that.
Yeah, it was funny because both of us came from an entrepreneurial environment. You know, both of our dads were entrepreneurs, and my first job out of school was working for my dad in the restaurant business. And you know, my environment or education and business was coming home and seeing him, you know, working on spreadsheets at the dinner table, right? And I would just naturally be involved in that. And after I graduated, I took over a couple of his stores, and you know, employment base was fast food. The employment base was what you would expect. You know, high school kids are earning gas money or part-timers, right? And I had all the information. I knew everything about the performance of the business, and I could not share that with the company at all. Right. And then there was Scott on the opposite end, who was working for in the newspaper business. It was in control of all of the revenue of the business and had no idea how the business was performing. Right. So you can kind of take those two extremes and say, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense, particularly when, you know, if I go back to what I was talking about earlier, we were really deciding what we wanted the culture to be. We were young. Right. And we were starting, and there was no way that we were going to bring somebody on board that didn't understand what they're getting themselves into. Right. Which was a startup. And a startup, by definition, is inherently risky, right? And so what we knew is that if we didn't explicitly explain to them how the business was working and what was going to make us successful, then we weren't going to be able to make them put them in a position to be able to make the best decisions possible. So for us, that really started by education to them on what numbers we needed to bring them in. I mean, so for example, we started with open book management as baseline as you can get, where – we hired 4 salespeople at once, right when we started to hire. And we told them how much they cost us a month. And then we explained to them that we needed them to make enough sales to cover themselves. And if they did that, we were all going to get a small bonus. I forget what it was at that point in time. Right. And from that, now we're explaining what gross profit is and what cost of goods mean and why the higher the margin, the more you actually get to keep. Right. And so all of these things are just baseline things where they start to understand the functional aspects of their role and how they impact the business in a truly meaningful way. And for us, all that resulted in was better decision making for them. Plus, you know, back to the business as a game portion, that's the scoreboard, right? I mean, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense if you're working inside of a business and if you don't functionally understand how to perform, what you're doing and how it's impacting the performance of the business. So we strive really hard every single day since day one, going back to that gross profit example for the salespeople and making sure that people understand what their role is and try and drive it all the way down to that P&L.
Well, it's interesting because a couple of things, you know, on the one hand, doing that, you guys are so used to doing it now, but it's a very, I mean, it strikes me as something that's very vulnerable, right? I mean, it's a very vulnerable position when you just sort of open it up and lay it out to these people who are just joining your team. And yet on the other extreme, on the other side, with the actual people coming on, I imagine it feels very inviting and very much as though they have their own sort of ownership stake because they get to kind of see and learn how the business runs, and they feel very much part of a team, which can directly lead to their growth as members of the team. But it definitely seems, you know, like a vulnerable place to just open that up to people. And so I admire that you guys have done that, and more and more companies are starting to do that, but certainly not the majority.
Yeah. Once you make, now don't get me wrong. I mean, there's times it sucks, right? When you're not hitting your numbers or things right. You know, but that's reality. I mean, the thing is if you go to that, the contrary is that we're lying to the staff about how we're actually performing and how the heck am I supposed to create urgency if I'm not being honest? And so if one of the core values of your business is just transparency, right? If you're just honest, right? We're all adults in here. Just share it, right? And tell them where we're at. When we were going through the recession, having those open book numbers was one of the best things we could do. There was no hiding from it, right? And so people understood. Plus, I mean, it also helped that the rest of the free world wasn't actually doing very well either. So it wasn't just us, right? And we've had those times as well where we just weren't performing well. But you can point to something, right? And it's not manufactured. It's real. And so if you kind of rely on that, then you start to put the process in place. You learn how much is too much information and not enough information, and what are they actually able to absorb? You know, who's able to do what with what pieces of information? You learn all of that. And, you know, back to your point, when I bring somebody on board, how do we introduce them into the open book management? How do we get them to the point where they're actually able to use it usefully inside of their role, right? All of these things are learning experiences, but you start, if you have any inclination to want to do so, you just start with the baseline. You start very simple and build from there, just like anything. Learn to walk before you run.
Well, so, I mean, I think it's a good transition over to the leadership side, because I know probably one of the things that you get the most satisfaction of you know, outside of hitting numbers, right? The company hitting numbers, or in addition to it is developing leaders within your business. I mean, you've been doing this for a while, and I've seen over the last 15, 16 years, your growth as an executive and your ability to, cause you are in day to day with the business. And so can you talk a little bit about leadership and how you've evolved? And you know, I think you've become a really tremendous leader within that organization. But I don't think it's been easy, from the outset. It's certainly been a learning process as you've gone.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I appreciate you saying that. I think that anybody that actually wants to grow with an organization, it's probably easier now than it has ever been. And the reason I say that is because the amount of information is at your fingertips. If you want to learn something, you can't figure out how, then you probably shouldn't be a leader because it's all there. All right. So I am, I read a ton, right? And and that reading stimulates conversations. Well, thoughts, maybe not sometimes conversations in my head, right? About whatever problems it is that I'm trying to solve. And the other thing is that if you're good at recruiting and you start to understand what your responsibilities are, you're bringing talent on, and that talent is pushing you, right? So for me, I know that every time we bring somebody on board, and if they're taking control of some functional aspect of the organization, like for example, sales, right? And I truly bring on somebody that's better than me, and they better be better than me, right? That means that they are going to push me, and I need to figure out what my role is going to be and to make sure that I can make them effective. And that means that I've got to be improving my leadership skills. So, you know, it has changed. And one of the things that you can start to really get good at as you start to scale is understanding, you know, I've headed up marketing, I've headed up sales, I've headed up operations, I've headed up finance, right? You put yourself into a position to where you understand enough of it. And you put your and you've got a baseline process in place so that someone can come in and build it from there. I know that building from scratch usually doesn't work. That's a rare skill set to find somebody that can build and grow. But that's always been the kind of rotation that I've done as I've dove into a particular area and then stepped out and put somebody in place. That allows me to better align expectations. It helps me better lead them during one-on-ones and answer questions and play sort of that devil's advocate that's so necessary as a leader. So, you know, I think that's a process that you continue to hone, and whatever works for you and your style is something that's never ending.
So what's something in your daily practice? I mean, I know you mentioned, you know, when you're hiring people, you make sure that you try to get as clear as possible on what you're looking for, and you lay out the metrics and lay it out. What's something in your daily practice as a leader that you try to focus on, that you do day in and day out to really help your team with your role?
Yeah. So there's an awesome book called The Hard Thing of Hard Things. And it's by Ben Horowitz, who's a VC in Silicon Valley. And that book is awesome, right? And in that book, it articulates something that I think that's kind of inherent in my process. And it's the idea that, you know, the leader of the organization really has one main thing once the vision and everything is set. And that is, what is the structure of communication in organization for the organization, right? How do you operate? And how does information pass through different departments? And how does that all tie to some overarching goal or overarching strategy, right? And part of that, all of that is inherent with me as the leader, having to have bits and bits and bits of information as much as possible. Because what happens every single day is a million questions and a million decisions. And the only effectiveness I can have in making those decisions is to truly understand as much information as I can. And I gather that from my executives on a daily basis. So I've wondered this at some point in time, like how many questions on a daily basis do I ask inside the organization? Because I ask a ton. Right. And I try and give as few of answers as possible, but a lot of my job is to gather information so that when it comes to the point where something bubbles up and we have a strategic decision to make, or we have to adjust course, or we're doing something wrong, or something didn't work, I at least have enough of the data points to be able to be an effective participant in that decision making process, along with whatever executive I'm working with in that instance. Does that make sense?
No, that's great. What was it? You mentioned that it was Ben Horowitz, but what was the title of the book again?
The Hard Thing of Hard Things. The Hard Things of Hard Things.
I've never heard of that book. I'm so excited. Typically,
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, it's the best, man. It's the best. It really is. It's awesome. And there's pros and cons, I think, to the reviews in that book, but I ate it up. I'm actually I'm going through it again.
Well, that's
there's fantastic. So many good.
That's awesome, Andy. Well, I mean, as you know, we could talk for a long time, but I know you've got things to get to. And I just want to thank you for taking the time coming on and just giving some of your wisdom to my audience. And if people want to learn more about your company or you, what's the best way to reach you?
amedley@perk.com. That's with a Q.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Josh, take care, buddy. Yep.
Hopefully this was helpful for you today. If you are in the market for a franchise, I would highly encourage you to check out my free ebook, which is What to Know Before You Buy a Franchise. You can head over to my website at indyfranchiselaw.com and download it there for free. And let me know what you think. If you're enjoying this podcast, if you're enjoying the value that you're getting from this podcast, I'd also invite you to go to iTunes and provide me with a rating and review. It always helps for visibility on the podcast. So thank you so much for your support and hope this episode was helpful to you.
Thanks for being with us today on the Franchise Euphoria podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to go to iTunes and provide a review. Also, please remember that although Josh Brown is a licensed and practicing attorney, nothing contained in this podcast should be construed as legal advice, because it is not. The information contained in this podcast is general and educational in nature, and none of it should be relied upon as legal advice. That being said, if you have questions for Josh and would like to contact him, please email him at josh@franchiseeuphoria.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in to our next weekly episode.